Welcome to the Monster Club.
An honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans.
Fair warning, you may not have seen this movie. We have... Spoilers Ho! I'm Jethel.
And I'm Tark.
This week, we continue our look at the Final Destination franchise with Final Destination 3, Roller Coaster of Love.
You know, they actually called it Final Death Coaster in Japan.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then kept the name the same for all the other movies. What the hell?
No, I don't know, man. That's just kind of weird. All right, so the Rube Goldberg of death continues.
Mm-hmm.
This time, amusement park, I guess it's some kind of I guess their school does something for the senior class right before they graduate, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a carnival of sorts. And they put up this big-ass roller coaster. And things go amiss.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's a carnival. Just that they have a lot of carnival setups at this amusement park. Because the roller coaster is definitely meant to be a permanent fixture.
You couldn't just set that up for a weekend or something.
What's the scariest roller coaster you've ever ridden on?
I've only been on one.
Really?
Yeah, it's Canobie Lake Park in Canobie, New Hampshire.
Any good?
I guess. It's one of the oldest in the country.
Why just the one? You scared?
I'm not big on heights.
Hmm.
It's not the roller.
Shit. Guess what? That's my phone alarm telling me it's time to record the podcast.
Oh, wow. Good thing you're already doing it then.
Yeah, I'm on that.
Okay. Come on, you couldn't just change your little tone to there is someone.
Oh, man, that would have been great. But no, I didn't have that kind of forethought.
But, no, so it's not the roller coaster itself that frightens me. I'm just not good with heights.
Okay, so a couple of decades ago, we had Astroworld here in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the other side of the 610 loop from the Astrodome. And it's gone now, Six Flags Astroworld. It's just a big field there. It was torn down after it stopped making money. And but for years, they had a number of roller coasters there that were pretty fun. And they even had one of those old wooden frame ones, which was especially scary because you could hear the entire thing creak as the coaster went around the track.
Nice.
Yeah.
The one I was talking about is a big wooden roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something especially frightening about those. I love roller coasters, though. I like watching I'm too big to ride them these days, but... if I slimmed down, yeah, I would definitely go back and ride them. I think they're great fun.
I was trying to look up. Most of the Final Destination franchises are based on actual...
No, they're not. We discussed this earlier.
Well, most of them are.
No. No, not even the first one and the second one. No, they're not. The dates are too close together.
Look, pal, it's my theory and I'm sticking to it!
Yeah.
So I was just looking up. When was Fabio hit by that bird while doing a roller coaster? It was actually 1999.
Yeah, there's no link.
I know. But come on, we're trying to... Controversy! Theories! And
bullshit.
It's all bullshit, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes you just gotta say, it's a fucking movie.
Mm. Yeah, there's no... I mean, that's a popular theory, but there's no link.
Yeah. Mm. All right, so what we have here is the continuation of the Rube Goldberg of Death.
It's kind of a standalone film, isn't it? It's not linked up at all to the other
films.
No,
they do mention Flight 180, and I wish they'd stop doing it.
Yeah.
At this point,
but they kind of have to. But
yeah, but they don't have to is the thing.
Right. Well,
the last one, Final Destination 2, they mentioned the thing. They went to go see the girl, and they went to go see the mortician. In this one, they just mention the first movie, but that's it.
So the mentioning of the first movie takes place of visiting the mortician?
In part two, but it doesn't happen in this one. So my thought is, why even bother bringing it up? Have it be a standalone movie.
Mm.
You know, because I knew it was going to happen, but I'm sitting there watching this last night. It's like, hey, you know, there was this Flight 180. I'm thinking to myself, oh, for fuck's sake, let it go. You didn't have to mention it.
It would have been cooler if he had just said, and I think this has happened before, and have him just kind of show some printouts with some, you know, pictures of characters from
the
first.
Yeah, but that's what they did last time, though.
Yeah, that's fine. But, I mean, you know, the new characters have to discover what the story is, you know, what the gimmick is.
It just becomes a repeating thing. It's like Final Destination 17, and it becomes the same thing. Person experiences a massive disaster. Oh, it was just a premonition. They get off the whatever. A day or so later, someone comes up, hey, did you hear about Flight 180? And then it just continues from there. It's the same movie with different actors.
Yeah.
That becomes a problem.
Nah, I don't think so.
By the third one, it starts getting boring. It's the same complaint that some people about the Saw franchise. It's just a movie. You gotta ask yourself, though,
how else would you do it? I mean, if you could go back in time and be the director in charge of Final Destination 3, how would you set it up differently? You know, how do you make it different enough from the first two films, but not so different that you alienate the fans? The fans visit the theater to go see this movie. They want to see a Final Destination movie. They want to see a huge disaster happen and it be a premonition, and for people to get off whatever it is, get away from the danger because of this one person's premonition, and then spend the rest of the film, you know, escaping death. No. Or not.
Like we mentioned before, this is, as far as franchises go, this is the best franchise, one of the best franchises out there. I did enjoy them as a whole, but by the third movie, the setup just gets boring.
Yeah, that's
we know what's going to happen.
I think you have to stick to the expectation a little bit. If they had made it another airplane disaster, or they had made it a pileup, you know, if they had repeated it that much, I mean, can you imagine what it would be like if every Final Destination movie started with an airplane crash or explosion?
Yeah, that would
be boring.
That would suck.
But
you know what I think it is, too, is that we're watching them one right after another right now. Watching them a couple years apart, like as they came out, would probably be a lot more interesting.
That's true, but I kind of like watching it all together as one big story. You know, it's not like I don't read a book and go, oh my God, the next chapter deals with the same characters doing the same shit. Oh my God, this book is so boring. No, it's a franchise.
WWE wrestling right now. They keep having the same matches over and over and over.
Yeah, that's been happening for as long as that's existed. It's still just men in tights doing stunts.
Oiled up men in tights grappling with each other. Nothing gay about that at all. Moving on.
No homoerotic overtones there whatsoever.
No homo. All right.
You're a big wrestling fan, aren't you, Jethel?
I used to be. I don't watch it as much as I used to, simply because it's the same thing over and over and over. Seriously, though. All right. Anyway, moving on. Back to the movie. Okay, so we have some deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Deaths. And some of them are a little, they're pushing it just a little bit.
Oh, I got to ask you before we get to the individual deaths. How do you think the coaster incident ranks among the first three films, you know, the pile up and the airplane explosion, as far as shock value and like, oh my God, you know, the terror that you feel at the thought of being in that situation?
Well, a lot of people have a fear about roller coasters anyway, so there's always going to be the, nope, that's it, not going on a coaster again.
Yeah.
It ranks, I would say it ranks number three.
Yeah, you don't think it's as scary as the other two?
Well, the thing is, I expect disaster on roller coasters, no matter how infrequent they are. I look up at roller coaster and go, I could die on that.
Yeah. I think the terror for me about being on the roller coaster, for me, that makes it like the scariest, is the fact that once you get in, that's it. You can't get off. You're locked
in.
Well,
it's the same with the plane.
That's true, but yeah. Hmm.
You know, once you're on a plane, there's no fucking where to go.
If you tried hard enough, you could get them to land again and let you off. They'd be really pissed at you, and you'd be put on a no-fly list. But
on a no-fly list and arrested, heavily fined.
Mm-hmm. But you could do it. Same thing for the pileup. You could pull over.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And not drive and just stay home. But you get on that roller coaster, and after it's gone, I mean, they call it a roller coaster. It doesn't matter if the tracks are on fire or just gone altogether. There are no brakes on that thing. You're on tracks.
Well,
literally.
Well, you're on tracks, and there are no brakes on the thing on the downslopes. When you're going up, there is a chain assist in some places.
Oh yeah,
that will slow you down. No, the biggest problem I have with the roller coaster itself was it went on too long.
You think so?
I mean, yes, I can see, you know, a dozen people dying on the incident itself, but it just took too long. I mean, once those wheels are off, they're off the track and they're just, you know, nose diving into the ground. That's it. They just put too much into it.
Realistically, at the beginning of the movie, you have to make the initial incident spectacular, and it has to take a long time. If you were viewing the incident externally, you know, from a vantage point, it would probably seem to go a lot quicker than it does from our close-up shots and everything that. But that's just cinematic artistry. That's
right, and it does do that. I mean, every time, in every movie, we always see, okay, we got major detail going on in the premonition, then when it actually happens, over like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that might be down to if you're in a perilous situation.
Time slows.
Well, it seems to. And that has to do with your brain working overtime trying to find a solution to help you survive immediately. That's why people's life flashes before their eyes, just before they die. If they see it coming.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, quick, hurry up. Let's dig through all the records. so that could explain it a little bit. And I do think I would be pretty disappointed if the initial incident scene at the beginnings of these movies wasn't of a significant length. And had lots of detail and entertaining and oh my god, you know, it's got to be like that at the beginning of these movies. That's how they start off. So I wouldn't do that differently. Well, you never answered my question.
What's that?
How would you have structured Final Destination 3 to make it different enough from the first two films to escape that? Oh my god, it's the same fucking thing.
I don't think you can.
Well, there you go.
It's a Final Destination. They have a formula, and you pretty much have to follow it.
So basically what
it's either you like the movie structure or you don't.
So what you're doing is you're bitching because the sky is still blue today when it was blue yesterday.
God damn blue sky!
All right, so let's get down to the individual deaths.
Nitty gritty! Ash and Ash. Oh, what foreshadowing of names.
Oh, yeah, I know, right?
Death by tanning bed.
Oh, man.
This is more based on urban legends than actual events. I looked it up. No one has actually died in a tanning bed.
Uh-uh. And they can't raise the voltage by sprinkling water on the...
No. The thing would have shorted out. It wouldn't have...
Yeah, there are safety systems. But yeah. For the purposes of the movie, holy shit, what a way to go.
Yeah, I mean, but you have a better chance of dying of skin cancer from the tanning beds than actually dying in the tanning beds themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Tanning beds. And naked booty. Actually, naked titty, not naked booty.
Well, one of them had no bottoms on, but the other one wore bottoms because she initially didn't want to do the nude scene at all. Mm. And then she had a talk with the directors, and they said, okay, well, how about wear bottoms, and then we'll put a line in there about how your boyfriend gets off on tan lines. And
there you go.
And she was like, okay. And they had a closed set where there was just the cameraman and them in the closed room, and then the rest of it was curtained off, so no looky-loos.
Yeah. So next we have good old pervy Frankie.
Oh, man, Frankie Cheeks.
What are you doing here? You graduated like 2 years ago and then hitting on 17-year-olds.
Yeah. And he said something about how he stuck around to monitor their development.
Uh-huh. What a... I mean, I'm a perv. I fully admit that. Come on, Frankie.
But he's not just a perv, you know?
He's also just a douchebag.
Yeah, he's a douchebag. He's I don't know. He's the kind of guy who would, like, stick up nudie posters all over his bedroom walls when he was a teenager.
Yeah. You know, probably worse than that, because I did that. But, Frankie, if he hadn't died when he did, I'm sure he would have gotten arrested down the road for trying to pick up middle school kids or something.
It's funny you mention that. In the DVD and the Blu-ray for Final Destination 3, if you buy the standalone disc, it comes with a second disc that features a choose-your-own-adventure version of Final Destination 3.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and if you do certain things, Frankie Cheek escapes the death that we're about to talk about, and later he gets arrested because he's been taking upskirt shots of girls and stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Either way, so, got what he deserved. All right.
Yeah.
So chances of an engine actually flying out of a truck like that is rather slim.
Yeah.
It has happened a couple times, but like with higher velocity impacts than that.
Yeah, that it seems a little contrived that would happen, but still my favorite death, I think. Possibly.
Shredding the back of Frankie's head?
Yes, if only because he's a jerk.
Okay, so you think he just deserved it. Okay.
Pretty much. That, yeah. And it is pretty gruesome and shocking, especially the way they used the body double dummy. And just, you know, strapped him in the seat and then just shredded the back of his head, you know, like that. I think his bald head works, his shaved head, you know?
Yeah.
I think it really works for this particular.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been as effective if he had long locks or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you this for the next one.
Uh-huh.
Why do we always have an angry person who insists that his destiny is in his hands and no one's going to. And death's not coming for him. I'm going to live forever. I'm going to live forever. Fuck the Bruins.
Yeah. I think he must have put a lot of himself in that character. You know, the guy's name is Texas Battle.
Really?
That's his name. Well, it's a stage name. He was born as something else, Battle. But Battle is his last name.
Huh.
And he took the stage name of Texas Battle because he's from Houston, Texas, right. My hometown.
But you notice in every movie so far, there's always been that one character.
But he's proud to point out that he is not the first to go, you know, even though he is the token, you know, the token black guy in this film. And they actually say that in the behind the scenes stuff that I watched. He says, in this movie, the token black guy doesn't go out like a chump. I'm not first.
There you go. Weight's falling highly improbable.
There's all kind of safety stuff, but I'm sure they designed that shit.
If they wanted to do the whole crushed by weight things, a lot of people get crushed by weights in training situations. The way they did it was more for shock value than for realistic believability, because I don't think that machine even exists.
Yeah. I'm sure they designed the machine to be just something plausible that people who don't go to the gym probably would think, yeah.
But weightlifters and stuff like that are probably looking at that machine like, what the fuck is that thing? Yeah. That's dangerous as hell.
And how the hell did those prop swords, who can't possibly be real, I mean, they're just dull aluminum blades. How did they chop through the steel cabling on the... on the weights, but still, it's a
fucking movie.
But it was pretty shocking, and I really loved the reverse angle shot that shows the other two characters getting splattered with brains and blood.
Yeah.
And then the next shot is them walking away from the stadium wearing, like, you know, T-shirts and hoodies from the merchandise shop for the team.
Well, yeah, they're covered in blood. Yeah.
And they're carrying, like, their bloody clothes in plastic bags. Imagine doing that little laundry later.
I don't think I want to do laundry like this. Let's just throw this one away.
I know. Just incinerate that shit. I don't want to pick that guy's brains up out of the lint filter.
Exactly.
You know, that's just, ugh.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Like burning.
I'm good without destroying my washing machine. Thank you. Here, do you want to take a souvenir home with you? Here's some rain. No! All right.
I would say this one is probably my favorite. Yeah, I would say that. This one is definitely the most shocking. Because you're in this hardware store, and you've got all these sharp blades and poles and PVC pipe and just all kinds of boxes and nails and
picket fences and stakes and stuff like that.
And a table saw that
and wood that an incredibly fragile wood that breaks and splinters the moment it hits the floor. Who the hell would buy shit like that?
Something.
I think the most unbelievable part about the whole thing is I'm not sure they actually had cordless or tubeless, whatever, nail guns back when this was made. I mean, they have battery-powered ones now.
Yeah, it did seem to be the kind that you would use if it was hooked up to an air compressor.
Right. I was looking for a hose. And I don't see it, and I just don't think I don't think they had them.
I think it's kind of like weight machines, the weight machine thing. You know, it doesn't exist, but for the purposes of the film, it's believable enough if you don't know about it for you not to think too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, it's artful enough that I didn't think to look for that. So, and I've been around lots of home improvement stuff before. I do like Before the Death Happens, how McKinley's shooting the pigeons, the birds, with mm-hmm. the nail gun. Because the boss man says he doesn't want them in there because they keep tripping off the alarms. And I love the way his actor portrays this, you know, where he shoots some stuff and then he just kind of laughs a little bit and has this look, you know, this suddenly serious look. And he reminds me of a younger Jack Nicholson in that moment. I always like that bit for some reason, not because of the shooting of the birds, which I find, you know, that's cruel, you know,
that psychopath stuff,
but just the thing that he does right there. It's just a funny moment in the film that I thought was neat. So Aaron ends up through a series of events, through them intervening in McKinley's death, with her head bashed up against the front end of a nail gun. Now, don't some nail guns, they don't activate on a trigger. They activate on pressure against a surface. So all you have to do is slam it into a surface and it ba-dum.
Yeah, it works both ways. They have a trigger or you can impact.
All right. So that's apparently what's represented to have happened here, that she knocked the back of her head against the nail gun, which was braced against something else when it fell where it fell, and then the chunk 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 launched a bunch of nails into her head, through her head and through her hand that was held up to her face because she was shielding her face from, you know, falling debris, I'm guessing.
Right.
That was shocking. That was definitely done well. I mean, when you see the behind-the-scenes stuff, the body dummy that they used for her doesn't look convincing at all. It looks fake as hell. But the way they lit it and everything in the movie, in the shot they used for the film, it looks pretty convincing.
Mm. All right, then.
I like that.
Now we go to the fairgrounds.
Mm.
We go to the fairgrounds to try to save Sean. Was it Sean? No, Kevin.
Well, that and they learn that Julie is there.
Yes, little sister.
The main character's younger sister, who they she suddenly discovers via a picture on her computer is the other person. Yeah.
Poor Kevin, and, who's...
And the, he gets hit in the face by some, it's not fireworks, it's an exploding
propane tank.
Yeah.
Which actually would have caused more damage. I mean, this is one time where they've actually played down an actual disaster, because really, the explosion and the shrapnel from that wouldn't have just stopped at his face.
Well,
but he's being saved. So.
Right, but Wendy pulled him back. She saved him. She pulled him away out of the way of the explosion. So he just got the blast of, like, the fire and everything.
Singed him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So he just got a little burned.
Yeah.
And then... And then
Ian gets crushed by a crane.
Well, no, you skipped one again.
Oh, Perry.
The horse gets scared. Yeah, yep. Perry Malinowski. So that sequence really terrifies me every time I watch it, because I'm just seeing that stake that the horse is...
Yeah, I was expecting the stake to do some damage.
Oh, man, it comes so close so many times, just whizzing over people's heads and just coming with inches of them. Mm-hmm. And then...
But nope, too obvious.
Yeah, and finally it's the... I don't know what it's... I think it's used for tilling soil. I don't know what it's called, but it's that thing with
a thresher. Spike.
Yeah. And then boyfriend guy, I always forget their names, Kevin, he slices the rope with a sword.
With an actual sword.
Yeah.
At the last moment, saving Julie.
And then her sister runs up, Julie, who was that? Who else got off the coaster? Who else got the coaster? They're next. And then their two friends look at each other. And then Perry gets this look on her face, stands up and backs away. And then shup.
Flying flagpole.
Oh, man, that was awful. And then everybody just freaking out, running everywhere. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that had the necessary side effect of making the crowd disperse.
Of course.
Because you need the principal characters alone in the final area, you know, for it to really work. So that was clever, I think.
So you
mentioned the McKinley getting crushed. How do you think the order thing works in this instance? Because he got saved by Wendy and Kevin, and then
at that point I really don't think they cared.
And then Aaron got the nails, and then next it would have been Julie, and she was saved. And the guy,
but
and
either way, the next one in line is Ian, for some reason. So why not?
I remember what it was.
Tell me.
He's not next in line. Wendy realizes the fireworks are about to come and hit her from behind. Somehow. And that's going to be her death. I don't know how it's portrayed in the photographs, though. But so she ducks. She avoids it.
Hmm.
And then, of course, they miss Ian because death has different plans for him. That's how it works.
Yeah. Okay.
So it circled right back around because everyone ahead of him is dead already. So it circled right back around to him. So what did you think about particular crushing scene? Was it realistic enough for you, sir?
Absolutely not. It goes into the humans are human China dolls filled with blood thing again.
But there wasn't. I mean, he didn't get
He broke liquefied. Into little pieces. He broke into little pieces.
He broke into two pieces.
Also, if you want to get really technical about it, this went through my mind when I was watching the scene. He looked straight up. The crane was right above him. If it comes down, it's going to come down at an arc and miss him.
Yeah.
But it came straight down. So if you want to get technical about it. But anyway. Okay, he got crushed to death. Fine. We're just going to leave that one alone. He got crushed.
I disagree with that.
You know, okay, look. Look, pal. This podcast is called The Monster Club, not Jeff will tear us apart every movie.
Well, why are you doing it then?
Because I have to! Damn it! I really need to go on How Did This Get Made. I can find mistakes in everything. All right, moving on. Wait a minute, I got to do this right. 5 months later. Couldn't even go 6 months. Got to be 5 months.
Yeah, I just pick a good odd number. I do have to say this particular follow-up scene is the most impressive so far. Much better than sign swinging down or kid getting blown to pieces by exploding.
Oh, anything would have been better than that.
But this?
No, Final Destination 2, the friggin' grill exploding, that was random and unnecessary. And no.
More about comedy than horror.
That shock. Just sucked. It just sucked. Like, this one, better. Okay, so they're all on a subway. They're on a subway car. door opens up. She, what the hell? Wendy is trying to get off. Julie comes on. Oh my God, how are you? And stuff like that. Originally, it was actually supposed to be the girl that survived Final Destination 2. It was going to be revealed that they were cousins.
And the police guy.
Yeah.
Okay, it was supposed to be Kimberly Corman and Thomas Burke there. Yep. And that's what always struck me weird about Laura and Sean, her roommate and her roommate's boyfriend, because they seem to be written in the scene as, like, extraneous. There was no reason for those characters to be there.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's like they had too many lines to be just, like, random characters. Why wasn't Wendy just alone on the train and bumping into her sister?
Who knows?
So they... What happened was that they shot it with the actors who played Kimberly Corman and Thomas Burke, but then they had to reshoot it 10 days before the movie released because audiences didn't like the way the ending was shot for some reason. It didn't really jive with them.
When do studios listen to the audience?
Apparently the studio had, reservations about the ending.
Adam Sandler's
also.
Career is proof that they don't listen to anybody.
But anyway, so the actors who played Kimberly and Thomas were not available for the reshoot. So they just had to write them out and put in new characters. You know, maybe there wasn't time to rewrite the scene, so they just put new characters in.
Right.
And then, of course, Kevin pops up on the train also.
And having the last three people in this little Rube Goldberg of death showing up at the same place at the same time, probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
As the train suddenly rolls out of control!
Yeah. All thanks to a little rat chewing on a candy bar, short-circuiting the track controls for the
train. My only problem with the scene, again, like the beginning, it's too long. A train goes off the track. It's not going to continue for a half mile down the road.
Again, same arguments for the roller coaster.
If you're inside
the situation, time goes slower, and also it needs to be exciting and entertaining on film. Obviously, it's not going to take that long in reality. But
right.
This isn't reality.
It's Final Destination.
It's a movie.
So Julie gets killed by
a flying train wheel.
That somehow ended up inside the train. It's all right, though. It's a movie.
Well, apparently they collided with a couple of other trains on adjacent tracks.
Kevin gets thrown from the car and gets crushed between the car and the wall. Roommate and friend Laura and Sean get killed somehow in the crash. Yeah. Wendy survives! Let's hear it from... Clap for me. Wendy survives. Nope, oncoming train.
Oh, shit.
Train coming from the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Is this the first one where all of the characters died before the end of the movie?
Yeah, I think it is. Well, technically, no. Wendy did not die at the end of the movie, but... It was imminent.
Well,
it was going to happen unless Superman himself was going to swoop in and rescue her.
Right, because the camera cut off when the train was like 5 feet from her. So there's no way she's getting away from that.
Yeah, there's no reason to show that death because the movie is basically her experience and her experience ends with her death. So
now how I would have shot that a little differently just for shock value.
Mm.
Well, she's on the track. She has a broken leg, blah, blah, blah. Now... How it originally happened was you see the train coming around the corner and get closer and closer and closer. No, I would have shot it. She's concentrating on her broken leg. Oh my God, my broken leg. She sits up. The camera follows her to sit up position. Boom! There's the train right there.
Mm.
That's how I would have shot that one. You know, just a little differently, but same effect.
Oh, to make it to where she didn't realize the train was even coming.
Right, she didn't know it was coming. It was just right on top of her when she sat back up.
I don't know. Lights and sound would have made that pretty difficult.
I don't know. You ever had a broken bone?
Unless she was facing away.
Yeah.
If she was facing away and didn't notice the train until she saw her shadow.
Not
so interestingly enough, in the canon for the film, you'll find this if you ever get like the $7 choose your own adventure version of the Blu-ray on Amazon. there is a certain choice you can choose to where you eventually have the ability to read a newspaper article about the death of Kimberly and Thomas from the second movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They suddenly bumped into each other at a hardware store. And then the car owned by the guy who won the lottery, that same car ended up somehow owned by somebody else, and then crashing through the front of the hardware store and causing a series of incidents that caused the both of them to be consumed by a wood chipper.
Well, all right then.
So there you go. Not on film. Not on film, but still, holy shit, horrible way to go. So I think the lesson we can all take from these films is, you know, it's useless to be constantly in fear of death because you have a 1-in-1 chance of dying. It's going to happen.
Eventually, yeah.
And you're probably not going to see it coming.
But it is a basic fear. No one knows for sure what's beyond death. We all have our theories. Every religion has a theory, whatever. But it's going to happen sooner or later, and it's inevitable. All right, so where would you rank Final Destination 3 in the franchise?
Well,
besides number 3.
I can only say in relation to the first three, because I haven't watched the other two in a long time, and I don't want to think too hard about what happens in them.
Right.
Okay, so among the first three, I don't know.
Honestly, I think I like this one better than the last one.
Well, yeah, I do think that the when you say last one, you mean previous?
Right. I like this one better than number two.
I do think that Final Destination 1 and 3 are pretty even, and it's hard to say which one is better, but I do think 2 falls below the level of thrill that the other two provide. But I do like the accessibility again. You know, I mentioned that the scariness of Final Destination 2 was the pileup, something that we can all picture ourselves easily becoming something involved in, you know, someone involved in. Whereas the airplane thing, only some of us ride on airplanes. But with the Final Destination 3, what teenager hasn't ridden on a roller coaster? I mean,
I didn't ride my first roller coaster until I was in my 20s, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, it's very, very popular, very easily, you know, relatable. Mm. You know, someone could easily see themselves being in this situation.
Yeah.
So I think...
And getting on a roller coaster itself...
Yeah.
Is just, honestly, you kind of expect it to happen. That is the thrill of a roller coaster. You are completely out of control, you know, of your own element, and you're in the hands of these little wheels gripping on to a track.
Mm-hmm. Gripping from both sides. Most roller coasters are built with wheels on above and below the tracks.
So right. I mean, you can't do a loop-de-loop without it.
Yeah. You know, one last detail I'd like to point out is that Tony Todd plays both the voice of the devil figure over the hovering over the, you know, the crowd waiting in line for the roller coaster.
Yep.
Right. And he plays the announcer on the subway.
Yep. End of the line.
So, again, this makes me wonder, just how involved is this character with death itself? I know that they strayed away from making death a face that you could see. But holy crap, there's just no way. If you really, I mean, I know they don't implicitly state it. Right. And I know you can dismiss it as saying, oh, it's just a little nod to the fans. But if you were to take it literally, why does this subway announcer and the roller coaster voice have the same, you know, voice, literally voice, as the mortician from the first two films? He's got to be a supernatural entity. He's got to be involved somehow. If not death, then a observer of death, you know, something that is not human and is involved somehow.
Final Destination 3, go see it. Is there anything else we can say?
Nope. Nope, I think that's about it. I can't wait to review the next one.
So next time on the Monster Club, we continue with the Rube Goldberg of Death with The Final Destination.
Or Final Destination 4.
Well, it's titled The Final Destination.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, look, pal, I don't write these things. I'm just...
Yeah. You know, no one calls it that. I mean, they should just get over it.
Well, they called it The Final Destination because they didn't think there were going to be a fifth one.